This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Somerset Is Go. It's the programme intended to bust the recession right here on 10 Radio. And it's going to show how businesses in the Taunton Deane area are coping with the current economic situation. Indeed, how everybody's coping and some of the clues and hints we can all pick up towards a brighter future. And this week I'll be talking to the President of Wellington Chamber of Trade, Dennis King, about his own business experiences in the last 30 years. And I'll ask his views on the way to success. And John Pragnell of the Wellington Economic Partnership will review some of the latest changes on the Wellington business scene, and you'll be meeting some very happy customers who'll be revealing what they value most about a successful restaurant in Wellington. I hope you enjoy the programme. My name's Philip Knighton, and there's an awful lot to come in this next hour. And while I regain my breath, just a reminder, as I say, of one or two things about the programme. It's designed to put the bright edge on the clouds in this recession and for everyone to make the very most of their abilities, their skills, and to work their way towards a much brighter future. So let's start immediately with the interview from Dennis King. As I mentioned, the Wellington Chamber of Trade, well, Dennis is the president of the Wellington Chamber of Trade, but also he is a person who's run a very successful business in Wellington and Taunton over at least the last 30 years. It seemed a very good idea to go to Dennis to find out what he thought about the current business environment and how he got to where he is now. So, without further ado, I think I'll introduce you to Dennis. I've come to King's Cycle Shop and I'm going to talk to Dennis King. Now, Dennis is a very well-known local businessman, but he's also the president of the Wellington Chamber of Trade. I want to find out a little bit about the story of King's Cycles. Dennis, welcome to 10 Radio. Now, how did King's Cycles begin?
My father moved his business from London here in the early 70s, decided to go into retail from doing wholesale. I suppose when I was 20, my father retired and I kind of took the business on. So 30 years later, I'm still here.
So it was a family business. How long had it been established before you joined it?
In Wellington for 10 years, but I'd been working in it as, you know, as a family business. My father had run a business since the early 50s before that, you know, with bicycles. So quite a long time.
Was it inevitable that you would join the business, or did you have any options of what you could do?
Looking back, I don't think there were any options. It was join the business or join the business.
Would you say, looking back, that this was a good thing because you had something positive to go into?
Yes and no. I think positive, yes, because, yeah, established business, you can take it forward, change it and, yeah, adapt it how you want it to be. But it would have been nice to have an option.
Out of interest, if you'd had an option, what might you have ended up doing?
Ooh, that's a difficult one, isn't it? I like the idea of being a beach bum.
I'm not sure that that's a career, but I think it could be pretty enjoyable, actually. A bit difficult in Wellington with no beaches, isn't it? So, you joined the business. Where did you actually start?
Myself. Well, here in the shop. Back in the early days, in the 80s. Well, we had a recession in the 80s, same as we have now. Yeah, used to buy and sell bikes, and used to sell them on markets to supplement the income. At the time, in the early 80s, there were at least four other businesses in Wellington helping their shops survive by doing markets.
What was the mainstay of your trade then?
I would say service, bikes and servicing bikes, you know, looking after local customers.
And these would be bicycles that were used for daily transport rather than recreation, or was it a recreational market back then?
It was more transport, I think. People riding to work with their bikes. Probably less now than there was then, yeah. It's more recreation now than transport, I would say.
Did you think when you were working in the shop all those years ago that you would still be in the business now?
Well, I hope that this year to be my sort of retirement year. So, I don't think my plan's quite coming together. I didn't really envisage being here till the day I died, but it's, yeah. No, that's not going to be here till the day I die. It's. I think my plan's going to be 55, and then hand it over to my son.
Now, thinking back to what you were saying about having options and doing things, does your son have the option of taking on the business or doing something different, or does he feel obliged to take the business on?
I've given him the option to take it on or not, and he's definitely not. No interest at all in working as hard as I've worked. Mm. He's looking at getting a career and, you know, going on that way.
Now, I think you've hit upon the key, and that is that anybody that runs a business has got to be prepared to put in far more hours than anybody would expect to work. I mean, I know how many hours I work when I ran my business. How many hours do you reckon you work a week now in King Cycles?
Well, I used to work 7 days a week to a maximum of 14 hours a day. Now, probably only 4 days a week, because I'm trying to get the life-work balance right, rather than the work-life balance.
Well, yes, I'm delighted to say that George, who is... How old is George now?
He's going to be 1 year old in a week's time.
Happy birthday, George, in advance. He's also in the office here with us, so you might hear him coming into the conversation from time to time, and very welcome, too. So, not only have you been running this business for a large number of years, you now have a new future to look forward to with George, with the family. How are you going to strike that balance between work and family? Because when you run a business, the danger is that you're never at home with your family because there are always things that need doing.
Well, I think this time, yeah, there is going to be a difference. I suppose if you're working hard to build a business, you should at some point be able to reap the rewards of it. That's what pretty much what I'd like to do, is reap the rewards of my last 30 years' labours, really. Staffing is always a key issue to that, and finding good staff, keeping good staff, motivating good staff, getting people who believe the same thing you believe, you know, about customer service. I've tried many, many mixes of staff. I think I may have hit on a reasonably good mix at the moment. If it doesn't work, to be quite honest, I might offer some of them the option to have a management buyout, and then I can sail my boat into the sunset and retire.
Yeah.
I think it's nice to keep a business going, but there has to be a point to it, and the point is, you know, I've achieved what I've set out to do. Yeah, I've got a good business going, providing good service locally, but there has come a point where you think, what about me?
Yes. I have to agree with that, because I've always got a maxim, is that if you're driving the business, everything's fine, but if the business is driving you, then it's time probably to have a rethink.
I would definitely agree with that.
But it can be very difficult to accept that it's time to have a rethink. It's one of the hardest things in business. When you've been in a business for 30 years, it can be extremely difficult. So let's go back to the issue of staffing. This surely has got to be very difficult, because if you own your own business, it's very difficult to get staff with the same level of commitment, A, that you have, and B, that you expect.
Very, very difficult. For a small business like mine, I think you almost need people that have a self-employed background, so they know how to multitask and do it and be responsible for all the things that go on. The problem with that is most people who can do it are doing it and run their own businesses. Inevitably, you need somebody with an interest in the product. You know, people that work at a bike shop have to like bikes. Yeah, if they don't like bikes, yeah, I've had members of staff who don't like bikes and refuse to ride a bike. A little bit difficult, and they do have to go. It's very difficult to get the right people, and it's younger people are quite good, but they're always on the way to somewhere. A bike shop can't really offer much more than being a shop manager at the end of the day. Yeah, so it's very little you can keep as a carrot, you know, to keep staff motivated.
So what you're saying is that you will often get staff, but you instinctively feel they may be short term because they're moving on to university, they're moving on to other things. How does that make life workable in a shop like that? Because how can you plan long term if you think that many of your staff might be moving on in a year or 18 months or whatever?
It's very difficult. I mean, succession planning is something you need to be thinking of all the time. The problem with that is, again, it's down to management, trying to find good people. You have to accept that younger staff will be moving on. You have to try and look at the workforce, think, right, I want people who are stable, relationship, got children, got a mortgage, have to work, but also have an interest. and are reasonably intelligent.
Thinking of younger people, do you find that the younger people now that are leaving the educational process have the ability to do the job in the way in which you want them to do it? I mean, I'm thinking in terms of general literacy, mathematics and everything else.
The ones that have the ability to do it have been probably working as a part-timer in the shop, but they go on to university and then on to a career. The ones that drop out of the system and are completely institutionalised by our wonderful education system, unfortunately, they have a great expectation and a very low ability due to their institutionalisation to be able to do anything. Unfortunately, yeah, I do think the ones that drop out of the education system due to its inability to reach all children and teach them is, just fortunately they're going to be pick-a-packers forever.
The labour market must be particularly difficult at the moment. As you say, the difficulty is getting the commitment and probably having a realistic expectation of what your working life is going to be like. You already mentioned this a few minutes ago, that a lot of them expect to be self-sufficient, they expect to be successful in a very short space of time. Now, I started my own business in 1981, and I was never quite sure if it was actually going to work until about 1986. And in that time, I was working, as you say, 14 hours a day, 7 days a week, one thing and another. You'd be out in the repair workshop at 4 o'clock in the morning if a job had to be out the next day. You do need dedication, and you do need commitment. Can you see this coming back into the labour market?
Not unless the education system changes. Unfortunately, most of the young people leaving school and the education system and going into the labour market, if they're not taking the academic route and going to a college and university, unfortunately, most of them are coming poorly equipped to deal with today's workplace. That's why you've got all the councils and that. They can take these people and deal with them because they have the resources. Small companies like ours, I don't have the resources to take on almost untrainable people.
What do you think of the old-fashioned apprenticeship schemes that used to be around, dare I say, in my youth in the 1950s and backwards, where somebody actually joined the team and worked on the shop floor, worked in the workshop, whatever, for maybe 3 or 4 years to learn the trade before they moved on into management?
It sounds great in principle. Unfortunately, the modern apprentices view themselves of it has changed completely. They don't see that they should be working for a pittance and learning a trade. They just don't see it. The other side of the coin is one of my part-time lads who's leaving the student has spent 3 years as an apprentice from Rolls-Royce. Didn't do college, didn't do university, went straight from school to Rolls-Royce. But as an apprentice, he was being paid £300 a week and not exactly having a heavy workload. While he had a knack for the job, you know, it strikes me as if you're going to pay an apprentice £300 a week. Yeah, he's just completed his apprenticeship and handed his notice in. So the investment from Rolls-Royce was completely wasted on him.
What you're saying is that because he was paid what he was and because he was valued in the way that he was, that he didn't feel it was worthwhile staying with the company?
Yep, that's exactly it. He doesn't regard himself as lucky. Yeah, he just doesn't see the value in what he's been given. So he may come back to Rolls-Royce in a few years, but he doesn't think so. If he comes back to them, it'll only be for the money, not really for the job.
One of the pressures must surely be that if you are training and you are paid a wage which is in that sort of bracket, you cannot possibly be self-sufficient with the way that prices and accommodation, rents and things are these days. So how do you get off that first step and become self-sufficient in where you live and what you do?
Well, I think that the great and good of England and the buy-to-let market is going to make that impossible for the next 10 generations. There isn't the money, especially in smaller business, to be able to pay people what it costs to live.
One of the things, again, that strikes me is that particularly over the last 5 years, there have been many financial difficulties, there have been a great deal of problems, even with established businesses, in staying where they are within the marketplace. And therefore, people have been doing short-term thinking rather than long-term thinking. They've been worried about how they're going to balance the books in the next year, not how the company is going to look in 20 years' time.
well, we haven't had a couple of recessions. I mean, the last few years we've had foot and mouth, we've had BSE. There's been so many scares that have affected the marketplace and businesses. I mean, for example, last year, Wolves going down, you know. I think government is putting help there to help businesses look further ahead. But I almost think they've got to look year to year at the moment. You've got to work on a short-term plan. A long-term one is difficult, I think.
Looking at short-term and long-term plans, what are the plans now for King's Cycles? You've already said that you're possibly looking towards retiring, passing the load on to somebody else and spending a bit more time for yourself in life. How are you going to achieve this?
Well, if I get the right team of people running the shops, then I think I've got a chance to do it. I can step out and let them run it. It won't be quite how I'd like it run, but if they can run it effectively, the figures will show if it's working. If they're making money and still in business in the climate we're in, then, yeah, fair play to them. I'll offer them the chance of management buy it if they want it. Pay me some money, boys, and it's all yours.
So you would have no regrets at leaving the business behind you and moving on to Pastures New?
Well, I would have regrets. It's just that, you know, there's more to life than work.
This is, I like the way you say that, because this is something the older you get, the more you realise. I've said before that I feel that if a business is being driven by you, that's fine, but if it's driving you, then it's time to have a rethink. And so many people get into the state where the business is driving them and they won't let go. And I do think you do need quality time in your own life.
That's become very apparent to me now. Yes, definitely. It's, you know, 30 years of no quality time. Nah, it's not worth it.
Ah, but you've had the satisfaction of running a successful business. I'm going to go back to the business now, because what changed my own business dramatically was the way that internet sales came along, and the way you could buy anything and everything on the internet, and people would hunt around for the lowest prices. Do you sell on the internet at King Cycles?
We do a little bit, but we're really geared up to be a local business, supplying local needs, meeting local needs. The internet requires a completely different way of operating. It's something we do a little bit of, but it's not a major part of our business. It could be, but to do that I then have to invest in another member of staff. It's going to cost me 50 grand to get set up to do the internet, and I don't think it's, yeah, well, it's a big investment in time and money and resources to get somewhere that's heavily saturated with people doing the same thing. Because the margins people work on the internet are a lot smaller. Personally, I'm not much of an accountant, but I think it's going to take at least 5 years to get the investment back. And to be honest, I could sit on the beach for those 5 years and spend the money.
Here we are trying to encourage people to go through the recession and all the positive things, and you're going to go off to the beach, Dennis. I think that's a fairly positive thing, isn't it?
It is positive. I think running your own business, the reward is running the business and the fun you get doing it and providing a service for people. Having good team, people along the way that always changes. But I think at the end of the day, if it's your business, you've got to be thinking, well, what am I doing it for? I'm providing a service, great, if I can keep that service going, but it's got to give me something back. Yeah, and I think I'd like something back. And I think the guys that work for me, a couple of them would probably take on the business, I'm sure I could cut my deal where they'd be happy running the business. They enjoy it, they enjoy working with the customers and providing the service. If I can stand back and let them have a little bit, I think they'd be happy. They'd take the business forward another direction.
There's no question that you do get satisfaction in running your own business. When I was doing mine, to know that I'd made it work for another week and you were working out the accounts and everything else and looking at everything and you knew that it had worked does give you a very great deal of satisfaction. You know, there's a sense of achievement in running a successful business.
Oh, definitely. A very good sense of achievement. And that passed on to the staff as well. All the people got working with you know they've achieved something. You know, I make sure all the guys know and girls know that, if a customer's sent praise onto us, thanks for the job, they all get told it. And, we don't give them stars or anything, but they actually know the customers have said thank you. And that makes them feel, well, they're actually doing a good job. Yeah, it's not all grumpy so-and-so's coming in the shop.
No, definitely not. I've had some wonderful times in my shop that I can think back of over the last 30 years. I've also had some very difficult and worrying times. I think we all have. Let me move on now to people who are contemplating starting up a new business. Now, with the experience that you've got tucked under your belt, can you think of any particular bits of advice that you might give to somebody that takes a look at Wellington or say, I'd like to start a business in Wellington?
Well, some advice. It's a bit like people coming into the bike trade. The way to make £1 million in the bike trade is to start off with two, because after a year you'll have one. I think I applied to most businesses. A good business plan, speak to Business Link, get a good business plan written down and stick to it. Review it every 3 months, make sure you're on course. You're going to have to work 6-7 days a week initially and put the commitment in. But as we were discussing, the aim has got to be, you know, run the business, not let the business run you. And that's difficult, but you've got to run it as a business. Not, I think initially you'd have to run it as a personal thing to make it work and say, I want to make this work and go out and do it. But then you've got to let go and say, no, I'm running the business, it's not running me. It can be done, but I think a business plan is important. I review it every month to one to three months to make sure you're on track.
One of the things that has struck me over the years, I've seen new businesses start and they haven't got established quite as quickly as they thought, and they reach a point where they need more finance. They've either got to make a decision to close the business or to get even more money from the banks or wherever in order to cross your fingers and hope that it all works out sort of in 18 months' time. I've always felt this is a very, very dangerous point in a business. I've seen a number of businesses who have borrowed that second time and unfortunately haven't made it. And you then go out in a much more powerless state than you might have done had you made the decision, say, 18 months in, to accept the fact that it wasn't going to go the way that you wanted. And what are your thoughts on that?
I think you're right, it's a very dangerous state to be in. If you were going to refinance the business or run it on borrowed money, you've reached a point where it's time to close and move on. I think it's bite the bullet at that point and say, do I want to borrow more money? Will it really work? The problem with that, there's so many factors that could actually bring you down in a matter of days. And once you're in the banks, that sort of money, yeah, once you're in big money, you're not even going to have a house left after that. You're better off walking away and keeping your house.
The difficulty with this, of course, is that many people have looked at a business and said, I've always wanted to do this, I'm going to open a shop, I'm going to do this. And what you're actually saying is you're asking them to admit defeat at that point. They've got to be... look at the situation and say, well, maybe it hasn't worked, I'm going to walk away from it. And often a person's pride won't let them do that.
Well, that's where they need to have their business plan written down, set in stone initially, and then go back to it. If they're not keeping on track with the business plan, then it's not working. No matter how much pride they've got, it's just like, don't keep pushing it. Don't borrow the money. Don't throw your ass away.
There seem to be a lot of negatives in this conversation, so I'm going to come round to positives.
Positives, let's think positive.
And the positives I'm going to come round to this, you do see new businesses starting up. I was interviewing some people at the restaurant in South Street not that long ago, well, earlier this morning, which is obviously a successful business full of people rushing in and out. Businesses can make it today. There are ways and many ways that a business can push forward, survive and build even in these difficult economic times. Why do you think the ones that are successful have the success that they do?
I think they'll probably have a bit of a business plan and they'll be sticking to it. They'll also have the commitment and drive to make it work. That's the other thing. You can't approach a new business initially without having the drive and determination and putting the hours in. I think you can get almost any business off the ground and keep it going, but you'd have to make personal sacrifices to do that in time, family commitment. I think people that run a business for 18 months and then decide that, oh, I'm going to stand back and let it run itself, they're the ones that it just doesn't work. I think if you're starting a business, you're looking at 5 years to make it work. If you haven't, yeah, and after 5 years, then you might be able to stand back and run it as a business. But for the first 5 years, it will run you, and it will work. You'll get satisfaction, you'll make a business work. I believe you could probably make any business work if you put the effort in, but it takes a lot of effort.
Looking at a town like Wellington, I've often thought that the greatest advantage that Wellington has is the scale of the town. You can give a special personal service in a town like this that you cannot get in many a larger town or city, purely and simply because of the scale of the town, the scale of the business, and you can cope with what happens on a personal and a daily basis in your business.
Yeah, I mean, if you're running your own business in a town like Wellington, I think you've got every chance to make it work, but you have to be very focused. Be prepared to adapt weekly. When Greg's opened up, it knocked a couple of small, you know, coffee shops out. They could have kept going. They would have had no problem keeping going. All they had to do was put that little bit effort, extra effort in. So you've got to be positive. You know, you've got something to sell that people will buy.
But surely the problem is that, I mean, Wellington is a small town. Footfall in Wellington is a lot smaller than it is in Taunton. And if you are already under any business pressures of any kind, you need a quick fix on the situation. What you might produce might be perfect, and you might be selling everything you produce, but unless it's actually a viable business proposition, then you've actually got to take action, and maybe the only action in that case was to close. Thinking of leases, you'll probably remember this. I opened my shop in 1981 in Wellington, and property, you had to then to pay a premium to get a lease. Do you remember those days?
I
paid a £5,000 premium for a lease in South Street in 1981. Can you imagine that happening in the same way now?
Absolutely not. Yeah. I think people would pay you to take the lease. I mean, you get things like first year's rent-free if you take a lease now.
I know.
So, I mean, it's changed completely. The bad old days when you signed into lease and you were trapped for life, yeah, they've gone now. Yeah.
Yes, I remember my first days well. The other thing that I remember from my first days is that I borrowed the money off one of the large organisations, one of the big banks, and they recommended me an accountant. And, of course, being green and young and the first year in business, I didn't check with other people's prices. And I should have done. Because, believe it or not, the first year's accountancy fee that I paid was greater than the fee that I now pay 30 years on. How about that? We seem to have struck a number of cautionary notes in the conversation, but the bottom line of this is that you can succeed in business if you put in the effort, and if you put in the dedication, and if you have a business plan, and, as Dennis says, you stick to it and sort of check on yourself every 3 months to see where you're going. Dennis, thank you very much indeed for talking to 10 Radio.
You're welcome, Phil. It's tough, it's tough, yeah.
The programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as 10 Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
You're listening to 10 Radio on 105.3 FM, streaming on the web at 10radio.org. If you want to contact us about anything you hear in the programme, you can do so on 01984 624 137. That's 01984 624 137. And the programme, of course, is called Somerset Is Go, designed to help you through the recession. Next, I'm going to talk to John Pragnell of the Wellington Economic Partnership about recent happenings in the town and the state of business in general. John, what is the work of the partnership doing at the moment?
At the moment, we're trying to support the businesses generally through what has been a very difficult period over the last couple of years. And we are doing anything we can to support them, encourage them, and welcome new opportunities like the coming of Waitrose.
What has the general mood in the town been to the coming of Waitrose?
I find that most people are looking forward to Waitrose coming here. They're a totally different type of supermarket to the ones we have here already, and even those that are in Taunton. So we're looking forward to it.
So your view is that it gives Wellington a definite advantage?
Absolutely. We think that it will encourage people to come from Taunton and other towns and villages all around to shop and get that special type of service which they give.
Has there been any apprehension within the business community about this?
Yes, there has. Obviously, there are businesses in this town, well-established businesses, that sell local produce, and they are wondering what the effect will be.
The thing is, the site is in the centre of the town, so it will encourage people to visit all the specialist shops that Wellington has. So do you see this as a bonus? I gather from your conversation that the whole mood is positive.
I believe it is positive. People are concerned for their own businesses, but I believe that with this extra number of shoppers coming to the town, looking for that quality of food, they will walk around the town, they will see the other outlets we have in South Street and in 4th Street, and hopefully they will want to shop there as well to get a slightly different variety to the ones offered by Waitrose.
A small town like Wellington can offer quality. Do you see people taking the initiative in the town?
Yes, I think I do. I hope they will take the advantage. I was talking at a meeting just this week when I said that in my view, if everybody stuck together and supported each other in their businesses by giving their custom within Wellington, then this would grow things in the business community. And I think there's another aspect, and that is Waitrose will encourage different types of customer, and those customers will want to buy other goods of good quality, and I think that will lead to an expansion within the town, and I believe we won't see too many vacant shops in about 6 months to a year.
There have been plenty of plans to expand the population of Wellington, particularly with developments on the north side recently at Longforth. Do you see this as coming on stream in the near future?
Who knows? It is something which we have all been pushing for many years, and I believe the people that started the Longforth Farm scheme were doing so long before I came to Wellington. But it is something which I think has great benefits socially and in every other way, and it will be close to the town centre, so people can walk into the town centre to do their shopping. If it includes the Northern Relief Road, then the whole thing will be really advantageous to the town.
Moving back to the business perspective, another 2,000 or 3,000 people on the town population will probably push it just over that sort of plateau edge, and many other organisations will begin to take an interest in the town.
I think I agree with that. At the moment, Wellington is a small town of 14,000 people. The larger it gets, within reason, it will maintain its market town image and will continue to be an attractive place to visit. The added advantage of what's happening at the moment will be that there will be a greater range of shops to choose from.
And so we should not be afraid to go forward, but we should guard our individuality and the special things that we can do for people.
Oh, I think that's essential. Wellington is, after all, a market town with a lot of specialist traders, and those traders must keep going, and I believe will just enhance the town altogether.
John Pragnell, thank you very much indeed for talking to 10 Radio.
It's a pleasure.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as TEM Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
John Pragnell mentioned in his last talk about the coming of a large supermarket to Wellington, so it would seem a good idea to have a word with them to find out why they came to Wellington and how they view the economic prospects of the community. Here I am talking to Mark Shepherd, who's the regional manager of Waitrose.
Well, Philip, thanks very much for taking the time to interview me today. My involvement has been really from the offset in working with Waitrose in bringing a branch to Wellington. It's a location we wanted to trade in for a number of years, and obviously we're really, really pleased with the opportunity we've had to open this store on the 28th of January 2010.
How many staff are employed at a branch this size?
In answer to your question, obviously this branch was acquired from the co-op as it's never traded, but effectively what it's meant is we've been able to recruit 126 jobs and vacancies, which the majority have come from the local area.
Well, this must have made quite an impact on the local labour market.
Well, we hope so, and obviously from our point of view, all of the employees who joined the business are called partners, and the reason for that is very much with regard to the John Speed and Lewis's principles of you're working for a business that's your own. The whole of the partnership is run on co-ownership, so everybody effectively works for themselves. We don't have any shareholders. Our profits remain within the business or go into the pension fund or are invested in a bonus which every partner receives in April every year, and that all depends on the performance of the business. So the whole idea is to create this co-ownership spirit that you're working for yourself, and we hope that with the employees or partners that we've got here now, that they can embrace that spirit and understand the difference and why we've been so successful over the last 100 years.
Well, it's certainly good motivation for people who do work with a business like this. Are you expecting pretty heavy footfall tomorrow morning at 8:30?
That's the million-dollar question. I mean, we've done our research, and obviously we've aimed to make sure that we've got the resource right for the trade that we hope to take, but because the shop hasn't traded ever before, it is finger in the air time, I'm afraid. And literally, we're going to have to wait and see what tomorrow brings. We're prepared, we're organised, and let's hope, you know, we meet our expectations, in which case we'll be delighted. But as I go back to originally stating, we're really, really pleased to be in Wellington and to be in Somerset, to be fair. And we look forward to being part of the community here for a long, long time.
One of the comparisons I draw with this store is one that I know in Droitwich, which is in a similar situation. It's a town centre store. Is it policy to build in town centres?
Our policy is very much about, first of all, is understanding what the local needs are. And I think we've done a lot of research over the years with this kind of format of understanding what market towns need. And it's understanding that our role is to complement the offer. But basically what it brings is, fundamentally, we know we attract people in, we're a destination. And the whole idea of us being here and the work that we've done with the 2 hours free car parking is quite simply to attract people into Wellington. It's not just about Waitrose, it's about what we can bring and add to the town, and hopefully over the years we'll all see the benefit of that and then understand that actually we're an asset that brings trade and brings footfall to the town. That's our aspiration, to be fair.
Well, I mean, this is one of the points of having a supermarket in the middle of town. People are going to be tempted to browse around the town as well as here. Have you practical experience of the effects of a store of this size on a town of this size, which is a town centre?
Well, I haven't as a town centre, but I have of a store of the same size in a similar kind of location. And, you know, over the 10 years that I've been in Sidmouth, I've seen the impact there in terms of the footfall that we've brought. And, you know, what we've been able to do there is bring business to the town itself in support of, you know, two causes, really. One has been people want to welcome and have a look around Sidmouth, and secondly, they've come because it's Waitrose. So I think that combination is going to be identical in Wellington, and I think for the traders in the town, I think there's nothing to be feared of. There's just a great opportunity, and I hope everybody takes that opportunity, to be fair.
Well, you've led into my next question. Obviously, when something like this happens in a small town, other businesses are afraid that the trade will dip and trade will sort of disappear. From your experience in the past, has this happened? Your indications in Sidmouth are that it hasn't.
I think what we've found is the opposite in the majority of cases. I mean, we are classed as a supermarket, but effectively we are a food specialist. We are at the top end of the marketplace, and our market is about, you know, serving people high quality food in a high quality service way. And I think what that means is we're a niche player, so thereby being niche, it creates a scenario that we create opportunities for others. And I think, you know, that is what we've found. I think there'll be no difference in Wellington, to be fair. But I think, obviously, if you're in the sector we're in, then yes, you're going to find, you know, you compete with us in some ways, but ethos is all about quality. I'm sure, a lot of our local competitors are looking at local products and also things that they particularly specialise in, which we don't. So I still think there's a lot, the golden opportunity to complement each other.
Yeah, so you see this as an addition to the community and not in competition with the community.
Absolutely correct. You know, we believe that we should be good neighbours and be part of that, and I've done a lot of work over the last months with people like the town council and my neighbours just to make sure that people understand that ethos, and you know, the research has been done to find out what's important for Wellington that we can be part of as well. So I think that's a really important message to convey.
Do Waitrose get involved in community organisations and things that are happening generally?
Absolutely, and I've made it my business in the time I've been within the partnership to do that, and I think fundamentally the easiest way to demonstrate that is through the Community Matters scheme, where, you know, every month we select three local charities or three local causes that we allow our customers to vote on by putting a little green disc in a box when they leave the shop, and at the end of the month we weigh the discs and basically we share £1,000 between the three charities or three local good causes, and we do that every month of the year. So effectively, you know, we give £12,000 back to the local area. But for me, it's beyond that. We're a food expert. The part we play is food. That's what we're great at. That's what we try and share, the knowledge, the expertise in the community. That's what I still look to do in Wellington.
Mark Shepherd, thank you very much indeed for talking to Ten Radio.
Thanks ever so much, Phil.
News there about one of the latest additions to the business scene in Wellington. And thinking of business in general, I have a news flash here from Taunton Deane Borough Council, and that is that businesses in Taunton Deane are being encouraged to take part in a new survey aimed at testing the economic health locally. And the survey is being sent out to firms based in the borough as part of a wider countrywide scheming undertaken by Somerset County Council and the five district councils, including Taunton Deane. Now, in the current economic climate, both the public and private sectors have to do more for less. The councils and their partners want to ensure that they're providing the right conditions for businesses to grow and develop. Now, in order to achieve this, the councils need to understand the key issues and also the aspirations of the business community. So firms are being urged to take part in the Somerset-wide online business survey, a copy of which can be found at www.surveymonkey.com/Somerset. That's www.surveymonkey.com/Somerset. Now, the results will influence a wider assessment of the Somerset economy, which will be used as a critical tool in determining future investments in the county. Now, for businesses, this ought to mean better targeting and investments to provide appropriate workspace, skills and, of course, business support services. And Councillor Fran Smith said, "We really do value thoughts and opinions of the business sector. Their cooperation will directly inform activities carried out by the councils and their partners." And Councillor Fran Smith holds the economic development portfolio at Taunton Deane Borough Council. It's only a 10-minute survey. If you want to take part, www.surveymonkey.com/Somerset. Now, I promised you we were going to visit a successful restaurant business in Wellington, and again, the success of a business depends on a number of very important factors. Just have a listen to the customers in this restaurant to see why they go there. Well, as you can hear from the noises in the background, I'm in a very busy place right in the middle of Wellington. The object of this programme is to look at businesses that are successful, and I've come to a cafe in South Street in Wellington. I'm going to talk to one or two of the customers as to why they think this business works. First of all, I'm going to go to Bill Radford, who is opposite me on the other side of the table. Bill, you're here most days in the week. Why do you come here?
Well, the coffee's good for a start. Well, I think that's sort of reason enough. But it's the atmosphere of the place and the sheer friendliness of the people who own and run the business. I describe something of a community cafe. It's sufficiently large to accommodate about 40 covers, but small enough to become involved with everybody else's conversation. And the whole thing just seems to be a social hour every morning.
And how do you think this has been achieved?
Well, I think it's been being achieved by the sheer hours and the organisation of people who own the place.
You say hours and organisation, so what you're saying is that they work over and above what anybody else would do because they believe in the business that they are running. But also it's the approach to customers and everything else, and it does feel like a family in here. How special do you think this place is?
Well, I don't know how you'd categorise that, but it's a place that I come to virtually every day. I live on my own, and this gives me an opportunity to meet a lot of people. There are people that I meet virtually every morning, sit at the same table, but it just sort of spills over right throughout the whole cafe, that you become involved with all the customers, even just passing the time of day, or when we do a crossword puzzle and we find a particularly difficult clue, somebody will call over your shoulder, particularly if it's sort of popular music and we don't know anything about. So everybody becomes involved. It is genuinely a community cafe.
The lead-in from this is that something which is successful is a positive influence. You come through the door and you go out feeling more positive or more happy than when you came in. No matter what happens in here, it is a positive experience to use a business like this.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's a happy environment. The staff are absolutely wonderful. The two girls who work here are so busy, but they seem to go out of their way to be accommodating. They are pleasant. They are very friendly, helpful. I just can't speak highly enough of the staff and the whole place.
So in these difficult trading times, what you're telling me, if I'm reading you correctly, is first of all, you've got personal service at a very, very high level. You've got quality. You've got quality of service, quality of product. And you've got an atmosphere that you like to be in and other people like to be in, which makes it a very comfortable place to be. Now, all these things require a tremendous amount of hard work. And this surely is the baseline of why this place works. Everybody works twice as much as you might expect them to do so.
I think you've summed that up in quite adequately. It is the number of hours that these people put in, because it's 7 days a week. Perhaps they don't open as long on a Sunday as they do on a weekday, but they're still here, and this place is buzzing every day, and it's for those reasons that you've just described.
So it's hard work, it's quality, and it's personal service, and these are things that businesses in a small town like Wellington are very good at. I mean, personal service in many of the shops in Wellington is exemplary. There's no question about that. They're able to offer things that the bigger shops in the bigger towns can't do, because being a small business, the owners of the businesses work in the shops, and they've got the dedication and the drive to push it forward and to be excellent in what they do.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I agree with everything you say there.
I'm now going to move across to Joyce Norris, who's sitting on the other side of the table, having cleared a cup of coffee, with a large smile on her face. Joyce, why do you come here?
Very much for the same reasons as Bill. I've been in Wellington for nearly 3 years, and when this place opened just about 18 months ago, the place we used to go to had burnt down, and we started meeting here, and I'm on my own. I'm very, very old, and somehow or other we formed a group. We meet every morning pretty well for coffee, come in at 9 o'clock. We sit for a long time over one cup of coffee, and nobody gives you the feeling that you ought to move on. You never feel as if you're a nuisance. I quite often come in at lunchtime. I don't hesitate ever to bring any of my friends in. It's the sort of place where everybody is welcome, ranging from the building men who work on the buildings in the town, come in for their big breakfast. You get the parents of the pupils who go to the private school in Wellington. You get our little group, which varies from 6 to about 8, and we have a breakfast club. We meet once a month, and it's just an amazing place. The food is excellent. I don't think you could go anywhere where you would get better average food. And it always, it's quite a small kitchen, and the food you always feel is freshly prepared for you, you know, not something stuck in a microwave. And the whole atmosphere is just extraordinary, really. I can only define it in that way. They know who you are. When you've been in about twice, they know your name. If I ring up to book a table, I don't have to say who I am. They always know. And they will do everything they can to accommodate disabled people, whether in wheelchairs, whether they have buggies. Children are welcome. It's just a wonderful place, no doubt about it.
We're going back to the same things again. We're going back to quality of product, quality of service, and a real belief and passion in the business that you run. And this is what marks out a successful business in these rather difficult times. It's a very difficult thing to do because it takes a very, very major portion of your life. You have to put the rest of your life on hold to run a business like this. But I think that you would agree that's why it is successful.
Yes, I would say so. And if you came in here almost any time of the day, you wouldn't think that we were in a time of recession, but somehow or other people manage. And you don't get the feeling that you've got to spend a vast amount of money to sit here and chat to your friends and, as Bill said, share communally with our crossword puzzles. And generally create a bit of mayhem, really, don't we?
So what you're saying is that because of the way the place is run, it becomes a place where you feel comfortable as a group and as a community. I'm going to move across now to Brian Aykroyd. You're also sitting around this table, and I know you've drunk more cups of coffee here than most people. Brian, what is it for you that makes a successful business like this?
It's the personal service you get. They know your name. I come in, I sit down, next thing my coffee's there. I don't even have to order it, unless I wanted something different, of course. But the thing about the place is, where we used to meet was quite small, about a quarter of the size of the place. So you could understand people listening and talking to each other, but this is four times the size and they've got the same atmosphere we had there. Which is amazing, really, when you think of the size of the place. And I come in, sit with my friends here talking, doing the crosswords, as they say, and people have come in through the door, and I've been facing the door, and I haven't known them or spoken to them before. Bill or Joyce or Rosemary, who comes sometimes, have put their hand up, said hello. Now, when they come in, if I'm on my own, they'll even put my hand up and say morning, you know. And it's just a community atmosphere that you, I don't know how you create it apart from quality, as you say, quality of service, quality of presentation. There's always people in here having breakfast, and especially on a Friday, if you don't get in here by 10 o'clock, you've got to queue up nearly to get a seat. So there we are. I mean, recession, not in here.
We've all said that it's sheer hard work that makes us, but it's also the fact that they are genuinely interested in their customers. You come in here, and if you said something to a member of the staff a week ago, when you come in a week later, they will say, how is so-and-so? How did you get on at so-and-so? And I think that kind of approach to a job really is remarkable.
Yes, I mean, I get up in the morning and I look forward to coming up here for a coffee and a chat with everybody, because the atmosphere in the place. I used to go to other coffee shops, but you were just sat on your own maybe, or sat with two people and just talking, and that was it. Nobody else joined in. But as Joyce said, you can be asking a question of something that we don't know much about for a crossword. Somebody two tables away heard it and said, the answer is, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, so we're back to the maxims again of quality, service, and a deep interest in your customers and a dedication to what you do. Well, you've just heard from some of the customers of the cafe. I'm now going to go over to the people who run it. That's Ajda and Mehmet. First of all, I'm going to go to Mehmet. Tell me why you think Cafelicious works as a business, Mehmet.
I think it's our service. We welcome to our customers and reasonable price. That's why it's make it work.
One of the things you said to me earlier in conversation is you said no matter what the pressure is, no matter how many people are in the restaurant, no matter what you're doing, everybody will get exactly the same high service no matter what. That's what you promise to all your customers, isn't it? The same degree of that high level of service on all things.
I think is that we set up our kitchen, our service area, set up as a restaurant, then we cover and the people get the higher service. That's to be make it work like that.
So what you've done is you shape the number of tables to the kitchen facility so that everybody will get a high degree of service. You haven't put more tables in because you feel the service might suffer if you did.
Yes, when you put more table, obviously you get more customer and you can put same service with the customer. That's why we don't want to put more table and we want to keep as it is.
Something which is very noticeable in here is you take a great interest in your customers. I'm going to move across to Ashda now. And Ashda, when did the restaurant open?
25th of November 2008.
2008, so you've got well over a year's experience here. Do you think it's going well?
Yeah, I think it's going very well, actually, because the beginning, when we opened the restaurant, we haven't got that much customers, so we're building up slowly. And we have a lot of customers now. They come back, they come in, they try, they come back.
I think you've hit upon the secret. People have come into here. They like what they see. They like what they taste. They come back. They bring their friends. They bring their business colleagues. And that's how a business grows. It grows because people recommend it.
That is word of mouth, I think. So everybody tells everybody and brings some more people. So, and they're always welcome when they come.
Sound advice there from businesses in Wellington. Today's edition of Somerset is going to be repeated again on Saturday. So from me, Philip Knighton, here in the studio, thank you once again for listening. Oh, I can hear the Thunderbirds theme coming in the distance. And I hope you found what you've listened to today inspiring in some way, and that it'll lead you forward into a brave new world. So from me, Philip Knighton, here in the 10 Radio Studios, thanks for listening to Somerset is Go. We'll be back with you on Saturday for the repeat, and next week on Wednesday evening 5 till 6 for another Somerset is Go.